All right, you can turn to Ruth chapter 2. Every story has to have a main character, doesn't it? Surely there are lots of supporting characters and antecedent characters that are working to move a storyline forward and bring it to a fitting conclusion. Often there's a hero of a story as well, someone who is a rescuer, someone who is delivering. I want to begin by asking you this. Have you ever read or watched maybe a story in which you thought you knew who the main character was, or even maybe who the hero of the story was, and yet as the story progressed, you realized that maybe you were just a bit off. There was a twist, or there was something that actually changed your perspective a little bit about what the story was doing and who was so central to the story. I bring this up because today, in the next section of Ruth, we may be a bit surprised with who ends up being the hero of the story. And so today I want to give the third lesson in our series, and I'm calling it the person of redemption. The person of redemption. But as I mentioned, I'm going to wait till the end to reveal who it is. We may think that we know who it is, but there may be a surprise for us. Now, before jumping in, I want to quickly set the stage for where we've been. This is our third week in the series that I'm calling Redemption in Ruth. And the subtitle is A Gospel Preview. And in every one of these lessons, we're trying to see this big idea of redemption and how this is played out in this story. But I'm also seeking to show us how really this is a preview of the big story, the gospel message, the story of redemption. And so in week one, we learned about the problem that necessitates redemption in the first place. We called it the exile of sin. You remember we saw that sin is the great separator, we could say. It separates humanity from the life of God that they were meant to enjoy. It also separates man from God's world. Every human is going to die and be separated from this good world because of sin. That's why sin can be described as exile. We are away from God Himself, and we will be away from God's place. Last week, we went and we talked about the path of redemption. Learned that there is a path that leads these individuals, Ruth and Naomi, but specifically bigger for us, that leads us toward redemption. And we learned a couple important realities along that path. Two in particular. That the path of redemption always consists of turning and trusting. We saw that one must turn. There's a change of direction that's necessary for redemption. Just as Naomi and Ruth had to turn from Moab to Judah, so we too must turn from our exile of sin back to God. But we also saw that this initial turn must lead somewhere, or actually better, to someone. We saw that this turning then results in some type of trusting. There's somewhere that we're going. There is a destination that we're going toward. And we saw that for them, that trust was placed firmly in the Lord. You remember Ruth's great proclamation, "Where you go, I will go. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." There was a trust that was placed in God Himself. But that leads us right into our message today. Who is the person of the Redeemer? Who is the hero of this story, we ask? And that's what we're going to look at today. As we talk about the person of the Redeemer today, we're going to notice three responses that Naomi and Ruth have in relation to their Redeemer. And we're going to use those to teach us about ourselves and our pursuit of redemption as well. I'm going to give you up front what we learned from Ruth and Naomi. It's three things. Ruth and Naomi, first of all, recognize, that's important, you got to know who the Redeemer is. They recognize their Redeemer. Then they respond to their Redeemer, and they finally rest in their Redeemer. They recognize, and they respond to Him, and finally they rest in Him. And that is what we'll be looking at for the rest of our time. If you remember, last week we left off in chapter 2 and verse 17. So let me quickly set the stage for where we are. We are in Ruth and Naomi's home, and there is a conversation. Last time we stopped maybe a little bit early because they didn't quite have this conversation. But Ruth has just returned after meeting Boaz, and she is showing Naomi and telling Naomi everything that has happened. And so if you would, read with me chapter 2, verses 17 down through the end of the chapter. So she, speaking of Ruth, gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up and went into the city. And her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. Her mother-in-law then said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed." She told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead." Again, Naomi said to her, "The man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "Furthermore, he said to me, 'You should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids so that others do not fall upon you in another field." So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Now, if you remember, throughout this series, I'm really seeking to do two things. This is one of the most beautiful stories ever written, and I want us to see it. And so my first priority is that we come away knowing this story. We've followed it. We've felt the emotion. We've sensed the tension where appropriate. But then obviously, as with any part of Scripture, we are to, in some way, apply it. It's written for a reason. Just as any book that we read, the author has an intended outcome. And the same is true here. But I want us to see here in this first scene that I've read, I want us to feel the anticipation that's mounting. So these two women, at this point, they came empty. Remember what Naomi said at the end of chapter 1. And now they have been filled, at least partially. They have a man who is helping them. So I just want to walk down through. I want you to look down at these verses. I'm not going to reread them, but I just want to walk down through what we have seen here. First, we find that Ruth worked hard all day in verse 17. It doesn't surprise us, but Ruth is a diligent and a hard worker. She then does the work necessary to get the needed barley by beating it out. Now, though we don't know exactly how much an ephah of barley would translate to in modern measurements, we can say this much. It seems that it was substantially more than someone would expect to get from a day's work. I've heard an estimate of somewhere between 30 and 50 pounds worth of barley. It's a lot. And so, after completing her work in verse 18, she heads back to the city to see Naomi, and Naomi sees everything that Ruth has gathered. In addition, Ruth takes that roasted grain that Boaz had shared with her last week, and she gives the rest to Naomi, that was left over. Now, in verse 19, Naomi, you can just see this. Naomi says, "Where have you been?" I mean, her daughter-in-law bringing 30 to 50 pounds worth of barley. This is not typical for peasants who are just going to glean in fields. But when she asks, "Where have you been?" we see that she's really asking this: who was that? Who gave you that? She wants to know where, because she recognizes that whatever field that was, there's a special person who owns it. And she makes this clear by pronouncing a blessing in the middle of verse 19. You see, Naomi moves immediately to the person who had favor upon Ruth in the field. You know, this is really the first sign that we've seen so far in this story of joy and peace in Naomi. Or could I even say this, since her name means pleasant, this is the first time we've seen her pleasant. This is the first time that she has not been bitter. And I think, as we're reading it, it gives us hope. Maybe the story is turning around. Maybe this will be a pleasant story for Naomi and for Ruth. Now, I think it's so interesting at the end of verse 19, when Ruth is communicating in answer to Naomi's question, she holds out. It's like there's this tension. Naomi says, who are you with today? And it's not until the final word that Ruth gets it out. But the mic drop moment is when she says, Boaz. Boaz is the man. And then immediately you see that Naomi changes even more in verse 20. Because now Naomi is associated with a real blessing from God, not a curse. This is the first time that we have seen Naomi bless. She has been talking about how cursed she is, how God is against her, and now she actually brings God's name in a blessing. Now, what does it mean when she says that he has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and the dead? I think that this is really important for us to understand what is happening here in this scene. Naomi blesses because she sees that this man has shown kindness. And there are two very important words in verse 20 that are so important for us to recognize, not only for today, but for the rest of the book of Ruth. I'm going to teach you two Hebrew words today. The first is chesed. It's a gloriously rich word and notoriously difficult. But it's difficult because it's so rich. And the reason is because we cannot make one English word fit this word. There's so much packed into it that it's hard for one English word to bring it all together. But let me give you a few words that would be appropriate. It brings out the idea of loyalty, of love, of acts of kindness and faithfulness. Some have even translated it as loyal love or covenant faithfulness. Now in verse 20, we see it in the word kindness. This is the kindness of a committed relationship. This is the kindness that is loyal in expressing love and goodness no matter what. The basic understanding of this word when we read it for the first time in verse 20 would probably bring us to ask this: what is so loyal about this man? Ruth had never met him before. How can you say that this is expressing a loyal, faithful kindness when it seems that this is the first meeting? But there would actually be an inaccurate assumption in that, because Naomi clears it up in her next statement when she uses another very important word, and it's the word goel. And that's the word that we see as close relative. Some of your translations, if you're looking at something other than the NAS, you may see redeemer or kinsman redeemer. This is maybe the most important word in all of Ruth. And this explains why Naomi says that this man is expressing great faithfulness. You see, this is the first time it appears in Ruth, but in the last two chapters, it will appear 19 more times. It becomes the theme word of Ruth. Why is it so important? Well, we'll get into it even more next week, but I want to give you a little introduction. A redeemer, or a close relative, in this sense, is a close family member who has a responsibility to help out other family members in need. Now, when I say family member, don't think like family and art. Think of back in the tribal and clan days. This is a fellow clansman who, because of his closeness to other individuals, has a responsibility to do good on their behalf. So a redeemer is a clan or family member who, because of the proximity of relationship to someone in desperate need, has a God-given responsibility to come to the aid of that needy family member. And so I think that helps us understand verse 20. Because what has gone on here in this back and forth is that Naomi has realized that this man is expressing kindness to them because he's close to them. So what does it mean that he has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and the dead? This will sum up the rest of verse 20. When Naomi hears the name of Boaz, she recognizes what the narrator told us in verse 1, that her husband, Elimelech, had a close relative, this man Boaz. She recognizes that he is one of their redeemers. And so she blurts out a blessing, that this man, who has a responsibility to show kindness to them, has done just that, and so she praises God. And so, because she realized that Boaz is showing this kindness, this chesed, to living family members, Ruth and Naomi, and dead family members, her deceased husband Elimelech, and her two boys, Mahlon and Chilion. So then she explains to Ruth, just like I explained to you, that this man is a redeeming relative. And this is why she terms his actions loyal love or kindness. She sees Boaz as being faithful to the covenant of God by being faithful to the living widows of deceased clan members who are closely related to him. I know that was a lot, but hopefully that's clear. Now, that sets the stage for everything that's going to come in the rest of the story. Because now Ruth and Naomi realize that this man is a close relative to them and one that has a responsibility toward them. So in verse 21, we find that Ruth goes on and gives even more. Not only did he give her a great haul on this day, but he said to her that she could stay with his maids throughout all the rest of harvest and keep on doing this. Now let's realize that this is actually going on for a while. It's actually going on in the time frame of right now. These two harvests would go from about mid-April to early June. And so there are about 2 months where she is going to be able to do this time and time and time again. Naomi appreciates this plan, especially because, as we see in verse 22, she sees it as providing protection for Ruth so that she wouldn't be hurt in another field. And so we find in verse 23 that she does that very thing. And she stays with Boaz's workers in the field from mid-April to early June. And then it finishes in verse 23, the end of this chapter says, and she lived with her mother-in-law. And I think at this point, before we move into chapter 3, it's at least worthwhile for us to note this. After so much has happened in this chapter, really, they have been provided for so much. In many ways, though, we're left right where we were at the beginning of chapter 2. These two women, these very needy women, have been provided for these couple months, but we are asking this question. At the end, she is still living with her mother-in-law. What are their prospects for the future? Do they have hope? Will things turn around for them? Or is this just a nice short-term story? So, if we were reading this in a novel, this is a page-turner. We want to get to chapter 3, and that's what we'll do in just a moment. So, when we get to chapter 3, we are, again, maybe a couple weeks later or some time later after the end of harvest, we are again in the home of Naomi. And I want you to read with me verses 1 to 5, because Naomi is now about to take things in her own hands. She realizes what I've just said, that though they've been provided for, there's still much provision that they need long term. And so, in verse 1, we read, chapter 3, verse 1, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well for you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash yourself, therefore, anoint yourself, put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he's finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down, you shall notice a place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." She shall say to her, and then, sorry, Ruth said to her, "All that you say, I will do." Now, as a really quick side note, we are going to talk about a number of things. These are different customs, very different from the way that we are going about things. And I want to say a quick word to our young adults. I was wanting to address some of the way that this marriage proposal that we will find here goes about. This is not the time for me to address it, but at some point at Young Adults, I would love to discuss how this is not the way to go about finding a spouse. And there are reasons for that. But I just want to say right now that there are very different cultural practices. We'll talk about some of them, but if you ever want to talk more, we'll talk on Friday night. So, weeks later, Naomi comes, and she says that she is seeking security or rest for her daughter-in-law. This word security is so important. It's so important to understand what Naomi is saying here. It's from the same root word that we found in chapter 1 in verse 9. You can either turn back there or listen to this. We find what this rest or security is defined as. When Naomi said, "May the Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of a husband." And you remember, we've talked about this in recent weeks, that in these days, the way for widows and widows to find rest and single women to find rest was most in the home of a husband. That was where the security was found. And so Naomi, in that culture, is coming and saying, here is the best way that I can provide for your long-term security. She is talking about finding a husband. Naomi still has that on her mind, not just in chapter 1, but here as well. She wants long-term security and rest for Ruth. And I think this is something, a theme that's going to come up over and over again with our main characters. They are thinking of one another. They are showing this committed chesed love, this loving kindness, this faithfulness, this commitment. We see it again here. Naomi thinking about Ruth. And she makes really clear how she envisions this. She sees it with Boaz. In verse 2, she says, is not Boaz our kinsman? Remember that close man, relative to of ours, who you've been in his fields day after day after day? He's the one. Because it seems that Naomi was closely related to this man, it seems that she knows a lot about his actions. Because she knows that this night, he's going to be winnowing barley, in verse 2, at the threshing floor. And so Naomi has a plan of action for how to go about a marriage proposal. Now, the next verses explain it, and I'm going to take some time to explain because it's very different. It is very different, and we are not accustomed to this type of thing. So I think it does deserve some explanation. She says in verse 3, wash yourself, anoint yourself, put on your best clothes, and go to the threshing floor. What is the nature of these actions? What is Naomi telling Ruth to do? These three actions are found one other time in the Bible, and it may be surprising, and I think it highlights exactly what Naomi is saying. It's found in 2 Samuel 12, verse 20. This is when David's child, King David's child, dies, and he has been in mourning day after day after day, and people are becoming concerned for him. But here's what we read in 2 Samuel 12, verse 20. So David, now look down at your verse. I want you to see the same three words used. David arose from the ground, washed, anointed himself, and changed his clothes. And he came to the house of the Lord and worshiped. Then he came to his own house, and when he requested, they set food before him, and he ate. Here's what I'm trying to say. These are cultural symbols of a transition from mourning to moving on with life. So it seems as though ever since these women have come back to Bethlehem, they have, especially Ruth, even in the way that she is dressed, has been continuing on with her mourning over her deceased husband. Naomi makes clear that for a marriage proposal to take place, it needs to be clear that she is moving on. She is ready to go to the next stage of her life. Her time of mourning is over. So it becomes clear that Naomi's plan is geared toward marriage for Ruth. She says that she should not make herself known to the man until he's finished eating and drinking. And then she says this, that she is to notice where Boaz lies down, follow him there, uncover his feet, and then lie down. I need to make an important observation about the language that Naomi uses here and that the narrator uses in the next section, because it brings up a lot of questions, and I think it's important for us to at least address. A first-time Hebrew reader would almost surely be left wondering about the nature of Naomi's counsel here. Specifically, they will probably be wondering what maybe some of you have wondered before, whether Naomi is counseling Ruth to do something immoral and inappropriate. Here's why an original Hebrew reader would probably particularly be wrestling with that question. The vocabulary used throughout this section uses a variety of language that in other places is used for intimate encounters. So, I think at this point we would have this question raised in our mind. Are we going to see another, if I can put it like this way, hero of the Bible falling into sin in order to manipulate God's hand? I think that that question would have been raised. Now, if you just listen on, I'm going to tell you why I think that's absolutely not the case. But that question would have been raised. So then, in verse 4, she says, do whatever he tells you. At that point, once you get there, do what he tells you to do. So I think we would be wondering this, how is Ruth going to respond? If we're wondering, does Naomi have the right intentions? Is this the right thing? I think once we hear Ruth, this one that we have seen so high character and good moral qualities, we are assuming that that must not be Naomi's plan. But we've got to see to know for sure how this continues. And Ruth does say that everything that Naomi says, she will do in verse 5. Now, before we move on, I think this brings us to the first main idea that I want to draw out for us. These first two scenes have all been about Ruth and Naomi recognizing who their Redeemer is. Before the end of chapter 2, they did not realize. They realized this nice man, Ruth did, but we have had so many questions answered, so many things that they have recognized. First, they've recognized who the Redeemer is. It's Boaz. Next, they've recognized what the Redeemer offers. He offers rest and long-term security to them. They've recognized where he is. He was at the threshing floor. They've recognized when to respond to the Redeemer. Naomi said tonight. And finally, they've recognized what they are supposed to do. They are to directly and personally talk to him about this. So I just want to point out a few things before we move on. The tension in these scenes, in the first scene, is palpable. We know information that Ruth knows, but Naomi doesn't know yet. When Ruth comes back, she knows the man's name, but Naomi doesn't. Naomi has information that Ruth doesn't. Naomi actually knows who Boaz is, that he is closely related. And it's like we see these two women having information that the other needs, and then there's this tension, like, when is it going to come? And then when that word Boaz comes out, everything changes because they have recognized what their hope is for the future. In the second scene, the recognition is now even more personal. They have now seen that they know this man. Now there is something they must do to respond. It becomes even more personal. And if I could say it like this, it becomes even more universal. This is not a short-term redemption. They are looking for a long-term, lifelong sense of redemption. So, hopefully we can now see that these two scenes do draw our idea to this theme of recognizing the Redeemer. We're to recognize Boaz as the Redeemer at the end of chapter 2, and then we're to recognize him in chapter 3 as not merely someone who can make a change for just a short term, but someone who can make a long-term, lifelong change. And in each of those scenes, the recognition comes because of important information that has been revealed. Naomi and Ruth share the important information at the end of chapter 2, and then Naomi shares the important information about Boaz's actions in chapter 3. So here's how I want to apply this to us. These two ideas of recognizing and information being revealed. I just want to say it like this. In order for us to recognize the Redeemer in the gospel message, in the big story, if I could say it like that, we need someone to tell us. There is important information that we do not have that we need. Now, we call that the Bible. We call that revelation in a different way. But I want to be really clear that when it comes to redemption, what we need most, redemption from our exile of sin, we need someone to tell us. And God has told us. Can I ask you this? Have you ever recognized the Redeemer based on the revelation you have received? They needed to get this information and then respond to it. And that's exactly what we see in this next section. So if you would, read with me here, and we're going to read verses 6 and following. Now where we're going to go, our scene is going to shift. We're going to go to the town threshing floor. We're going to see this plan of Naomi's worked out, and we're going to see how they pursued their Redeemer. Ruth's approach is given to us in verses 6 and 7, so please read that with me. So Ruth went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet, and she lay down. We may be a bit surprised at verse 6 when we read that everything happens just as Naomi said. We kind of, in some ways, it seems like the tension's removed. We know that she's going to do exactly what Naomi said. But we're still trying to figure out what exactly does Naomi mean. So we still want to read on. We find that after, in verse 7, Boaz eats and drinks, and his heart was merry, he lies down, exactly as Naomi said. Now, We are told here that he does this after his heart was merry. And I think I need to at least make a statement here, because very often this is said as the fact that Boaz was at least buzzed or mellowed out, if not more. And I think a lot of times this is used to heighten, okay, is Boaz going to be in his right mind? Is he going to respond appropriately? But here's what I want to say. The language here does not necessarily mean that. Of course, it could mean that, but it does not. The way that the author says it does not necessarily mean that he has had too much to drink. We should not read that. The language of here could mean either. And I think that what will become very clear is that Boaz was actually very clear-headed on this encounter. And it's going to become very important as we go on. But I think that the question has been raised, will these two characters, whom we've seen as morally upright and devout, people of integrity, will they continue to be viewed as such when we finish this scene of this evening? Because she comes and she lays down, uncovers his feet and lays down. So now verses 8 and following, I'm not going to read all at once. I'm going to read them little by little. So you're going to have to look down with me. I'm going to read part of it. I'm going to explain it. We'll go back and forth. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward. So in the middle of the night, as this story, really almost any culture, we know the middle of the night is the time when things are scary, right? This is kind of a time, ominous time, fearful time. And we're wondering, what is going to happen in the middle of the night? Well, I think that this just adds to the tension and our anticipation of finding out what is going to go about here. Something happens to wake Boaz up, and maybe it's the fact that he doesn't have anything on his feet, and so he's cold. Or it could just be that he woke up from a bad dream, who knows. But he wakes up, and we get, in the next sentence, we get his surprise. It's like we are in Boaz's head for a moment when we read in verse 8, "And behold, a woman was lying at his feet." That surely would be a time of utter surprise. And that's what we get with that word, behold. We are surprised with Boaz. There is a woman at his feet. Question is, how will Boaz respond to this surprise? He turns to her and he says, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid." Ruth identifies herself and then makes a request that probably needs a little bit of explanation here. So she says that she is Ruth, his maid. This is a very interesting word. A similar word was used when she met Boaz in chapter 2, but it was a different word. It was a word that was translated handmaid back then. And this is the word, that was a word for a servant. This is a word that, though a very humble term, is often also used of wives. It's a humble term, but a term that could be used and is used at times of those who are wives. And so she's introducing herself in a humble way, but also a way that is at least open to what she is about to request. And here it is. She says, "I am Ruth, your maid, so spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." She asks Boaz to spread his covering over her. Without going into much background of that culture, I'm just going to say this. This is a proposal, we would say. It's a request. She is asking for his protection in a greater and more enduring way than she has already received. It's right in line with what Naomi told her to do at the beginning of chapter 1, that she was seeking the security of a husband. So what is the significance, though, of her bringing up this fact that Boaz is a close relative? Remember, this is the very same term that Naomi brought up last chapter when she said that he's a redeemer. This is the same word. When she says he's a close relative, he's a redeemer, she says, "Would you spread your covering over me because you are a redeemer for my family? We are in need, and I am asking you to meet that need." Now, I think that this word redeemer is so glorious. I'm going to read this from the ESV, verse 9. Here's how the ESV says it. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." That is the idea. She is saying, "Would you take me and would you provide for me because you are a redeemer?" I also want you to know that the ESV, instead of covering, says the word wing. Now, that's really interesting. He doesn't have wings. It is referring to that covering. But we're going to get to why that's so significant in a moment. But you can just imagine, he has just woken up, startled, asked who this woman is, and in essence, has a marriage proposal right before him. How does he respond in the midst of this? What will he do? And going along with what we've learned about Boaz's character and his integrity, it's amazing. The first words out of his mouth are a blessing from God. He says, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter." We're greatly relieved to hear this blessing from the mouth of Boaz. He invokes Yahweh's name and he pronounces a blessing upon her. Now, I just want to say one thing. I think that we are supposed to see how much of a contrast this is to what would typically happen in the period of the judges. And I want to be careful and I want to be tactful about how I say this, but remember, the judges' period is a time when everyone does what is right in their own eyes. If you read the end, actually, if you read most of the book of Judges, but especially the end of the book of Judges, I can tell you that what will happen on most evenings, if this happens with most men, it is not this result. This is risky. And this shows how much integrity these two characters have. We're going to walk away from this scene with not wondering, oh, I wish we would have seen them act better. But we're going to walk away with the scene seeing two people who come out with clear consciences and right before the Lord. And that is expressed, we get that idea already given to us by the way that he initially responds. He says, "You've made this last kindness greater than the first in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich." This is our word chesed again. This word kindness is, he is saying this, that she, in asking this request, is actually showing faithfulness, kindness, love. And we ask, how? How? How is that? Not only that, but he says even a greater expression of kindness than what she did at the first, which he's clearly referring to what she did when she came back with Naomi from Moab. She attached herself to her mother-in-law, her widowed mother-in-law. She has been helping her mother-in-law week after week, providing food for their family. And now Boaz says, this is actually an even greater expression of kindness and love and covenant than that. Well, we should be able to explain more why that is in the coming weeks. But I think it's amazing to see that Boaz is responding in a God-honoring way. And he continues to do so. Look at how he responds in verse 11. He says, "Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask." Not only is she not to fear, but he is going to go forward with everything that she has requested. And then he tells the reason. I think that this is beautiful. He says, "For all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence." Now, when he talks about all my people in the city, that kind of sounds weird when we first read it. What is he talking about, all my people? He's probably referring to those who we'll see in the next chapter are at the city gates. It seems as though Boaz was known in that community and was one of the elders of the city. And so it sounds like, what he's saying is, everyone who knows you speaks very well of you. And you are a woman of excellence. Now, what does it mean that she's a woman of excellence? Now, you may not realize this, but you're actually very familiar with this. Many of you are very familiar with what it means to be a woman of excellence, because this is the very same phrase that we find in Proverbs 31:10, when it says, "An excellent wife who can find, for her worth is far above jewels." Ruth is the excellent woman, and we now hope that she will be the excellent wife too. So Boaz, in this statement, speaks about her character. She is a righteous woman, and he says that that motivates his action to respond on her behalf. That she has lived according to faithfulness to Naomi. People know about that, and now he's seen that faithfulness even expressed to her. And he says that he is going to move on her behalf. Now, we, like Ruth, might be on cloud nine at this point. But it's amazing what comes back. The tension is coming right back into this story, because in verse 12 he says, "Now it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I." Now we're going to get into this next week. We don't have time this week, but I just want to say, again, these customs are coming into play. And Boaz, in all his integrity, is going to say this: even though I want to do this, and I'm willing to do this, the way that things go about in our society, I cannot do this until I deal with this other issue. There is someone who has, I don't know if this is the best way, but right of first refusal? Is that, I don't know if that's the best way to say it, but that's in essence what he's saying. He says, remain this night, and then when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Boaz again shows in his integrity in doing what is right, even if it isn't easy. What a picture we get of this godly man. And it's really interesting that she is called an excellent woman. Back in chapter 2, when Boaz was introduced, the same phrase was used for him, except he was called an excellent man. And that's what we see with these two characters. And everything that's gone on this scene so far, instead of detracting from it, like we maybe at first read, we were wondering, what is going on here? Instead of detracting from their character, it has only been confirmed. And so he tells her to lie down until morning, and so that she does not have to go back in the middle of the night. He has her lie down until morning. So I want to make a few summary statements about what we've just read here. First, a word about what did and did not go on at the threshing floor. I want to say this tactfully, but also clearly. What went on at the threshing floor was a proposal, not a proposition. There are people who try to argue differently, and I will tell you, they try, but you cannot do it. That is not what is happening here. The terminology could be seen to read in two ways initially. But what I think is happening here is the narrator brings up that question in order to totally set it aside. The narrator takes pains to stop short of where our questions might lead us initially. The way he describes these interactions are times of purity and of integrity. What we learned about these two characters is borne out by their lives. They are individuals of integrity and worthy of respect. And let me just say this at this moment, that I think that is one of the things that we're going to return to time and time again with Ruth. This book is teaching us what it means to be people of integrity and people of kindness. People who are committed to others. People who do the right thing, who show kindness no matter what. And we get a wonderful picture of that in Boaz and in Ruth. But I think that it is clear that both Ruth and Naomi in this scene take risks. I like how preacher put this when he was preaching through Ruth. He said that this shows the risks of redemption. Now, they could have been misinterpreted. It could have gone in very different ways. They were taking risks in order to seek their own redemption and their long-term provision of their needs. And you know, when we translate all of this to our response to the ultimate Redeemer, maybe we can even see some parallels. You see, have we ever wondered how anyone could ever approach the Lord Jesus Christ? He is God. He is perfect. We are human. We are sinful. And maybe it has seemed, in those moments when we were wrestling with whether or not to come to the Lord to confess our sins, does that seem risky? To be able to go before the God of all the universe and expose our own sinfulness? And yet, there is something inside us that would say that it could never be appropriate to ask for something as large as salvation and true redemption. And if so, if there's this connection, then maybe, just maybe, we see this similarity between Ruth's situation and ours. There's not too much I want to say in the final verses of this chapter, but I do want to at least read them and say a couple words before I summarize what we've learned. I want you to see how they finish after taking these risks, so to speak, and after going and proposing marriage. They have to wait. I think that this is so appropriate for the way that our stories work as well. They had to be patient for their Redeemer. Read down with me verses 14 to 18. So Ruth lays at his feet until morning. She rose before one could recognize another. And then he said, Let it not be known that this woman came to the threshing floor. Again, he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. She went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it go, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done for her. She said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me." For he said, "Do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed." Then she said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out. For this man will not rest until he has settled it today." Main thing I want to point out here is what Boaz does at the end. Just like we've gotten used to, he's giving and giving, and he gives again. He gives more grain to her. She carries it back. But I want you to see the last words of verse 17. It's the word empty-handed. And I think this is kind of beginning to wrap up some of what we've seen so far in the story. Do you remember at the very end of chapter 1, Naomi comes back to Bethlehem and people are asking who she is. And here's what she says. She says, "I went out full, but I've come back empty." Now remember, Ruth was right beside her at that point. And she says, as Ruth right beside her, she says, I am an empty woman. I have nothing left. And now isn't it interesting that empty comes up again, and it's very clear that actually Naomi was not empty. In Ruth, she had God's provision for her. And not only is Ruth not empty-handed here, but now we're seeing that maybe Ruth is the means by which Naomi will be made full. And I think that it's a beautiful bookend to chapters 1 and 3 that we see Boaz providing for these two women and in essence bringing Naomi and turning her around, her whole life along with Ruth. But I think that at the end in verse 18, when she says, "Wait until you know how the matter turns out, because the man will not rest," I think this does point to a theme of resting in faith. You know, these women have acted. They've acted in faith, and now they've got to rest in faith. Now they've got to wait in faith. This is what I want us to see here, that they've got to rest in faith of their Redeemer's actions. Boaz is not going to rest until he has dealt with the situation. But because of their trust in his work, they can rest. And I think that's what we're supposed to come out of at the end of chapter 3 as we get ready for chapter 4 next week. That this idea of waiting for the Redeemer to work. Now, I think that this was especially the case for those original readers of this book who were waiting in some very important ways. You know, how would this have been in the period of the Judges, this idea of waiting for their Redeemer? We were told that everyone did what was right in their own eyes because there was no king. They were waiting for David. But the original readers of this book have already had David. We know that because his name is the last word in the book. So what were they waiting for? The people who received this this book were also waiting for redemption. They were waiting for another king. They were waiting for a Messiah to come. And they would have to wait many years. And yet the wait of faith is common to every believer all throughout history. Can I take this a step further? This is important for us. Christians, there is a necessity of patience as we Christians await the return of our Redeemer, the coming of our King. And I think as we wait in the intervening time between chapters 3 and chapter 4, that we are left with this idea of waiting. And how are we at waiting in faith? Do we wait patiently in faith for the Redeemer to work? Now, before I close, I want to pull out 2 verses that I have skimmed over the last 2 weeks, but maybe 2 of the most important verses in all of Ruth. You've noticed that I've been all throughout saying that Boaz is the Redeemer that they're going to, etc., and that I've also been trying to apply this to our relationship to God. How do these 2 things connect? Can they really both be the Redeemer? Who's the Redeemer? Which one? I want to show you a couple really important verses. There is both a divine and a human Redeemer in this story. And here's the message, that pursuit of Yahweh, pursuit of the one true God, is pursuit of the Redeemer. To pursue God is to pursue the Redeemer. And I think that that is what this story is trying to teach us. Look at 2 and verse 12. This is where we'll wrap it up. Boaz says to Ruth on their first encounter, "May the Lord reward your work, and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." And then read with me chapter 3 and verse 9, what Ruth then says to Boaz. She says, "Spread your covering." Remember what the ESV said? "Spread your wing over your maid, for you are a close relative." This is the exact same word. And I think the ESV appropriately does translate that as wing. even though it's referring to a covering. But here's what I want to show us. Boaz is being presented in the story as the means of God's redemption. He is the Redeemer. God is the Redeemer. Ruth may be asking Boaz to be a physical Redeemer for her the rest of her life, but she has already expressed who her ultimate Redeemer is. Remember that? Your people will be my people, your God, my God. I do not think it is inappropriate for us to recognize that this is a story about a bigger Redeemer. If you'll give me one more moment, I'm going to show that that's exactly how I think Christians are to read this book. Because we saw last week that Ruth's trust is already turned and focused to the Lord. Now we see that she is trusting in a human Redeemer as well. Her turning and her trusting in God is ultimately manifested in her reliance upon this human Redeemer. She believes that God is providing for her through this man. Can I ask if that sounds familiar at all? Is there a man whom God has provided for us by? There is a divine and human Redeemer in this story, but there is the divine human Redeemer in the story, the gospel message. The Redeemer in every redemption story is God. In this story, God uses a human Boaz to redeem, but one day, God will become human in Jesus, and that will be the ultimate redemption story. He is the one under whom we all must take refuge. We all must find refuge under his wings. And so today, we've learned three things. We need to recognize who he is. And let me teach us that the Bible tells us, doesn't it? The Bible tells us, just like Naomi and Ruth find out who this Redeemer is, the Bible tells us who he is. Just as Naomi and Ruth responded with action, we must respond to what we learn about this Redeemer. And then finally, we rest in faith that he has and does act, and he will bring about our redemption. What a story this is. May I just ask if we are recognizing, responding to, and resting in this Redeemer. The person of redemption is the divine and human Redeemer, the Lord Jesus Christ. And it's in his name that we come. It's in his name that we worship, and it's in his name that we now pray together and ask his blessing. Lord, we thank you for this beautiful story. We thank you for what you teach us about redemption. We thank you for the picture that this offers. And we know that you are always trying to push us to see the glories of our Lord Jesus Christ. And we ask that this story would do just that today. And for those of us who are your people, as we are left between chapters 3 and chapters 4, I pray that you will help us to wait and to rest in the work of our Redeemer. There are situations that we are facing. There are small redemptions we need, like the grain that Ruth and Naomi needed. There was also the big redemption that we all need in this deliverance from sin. And Lord, whatever the need is expressed throughout the congregation this morning, I pray that we would all see that the answer is the Redeemer, the Lord Jesus Christ. And so would you turn our hearts to him today? We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.